there are lots of lousy businesses, and there's lots of wonderful businesses.
It's the art and science of money.
My job has been to try and figure out which is which.
It's Hi-Fi Radio from the Global News Radio studios in Toronto with Hi-Fi Portfolio Managers. Here's Wolfgang Klein and Jack Hartle.
Well, Happy New Year, I think. Wolfgang Klein, host of a money show called Hi-Fi Radio, each and every Saturday morning on Global News Radio 640. 2018, we're going to put that one behind us. It's all about the future, isn't it? By the way, best investments for 2018 certainly were not stocks. They weren't bonds. Cash did okay, but you know what did really, really well? If you didn't drink it, wine. Yes, wine collectibles up 10% in 2018. I have some of that, but I gave half away. Well, I drank half of it. I don't know if that works. What else did very, very well? Art. Yes, fine art. Again, up about 10%. And apparently in New York, a painting of a man in a pink jacket by a swimming pool set the record for a living artist. A living artist at auction. Usually the art has top value when the artist is dead, but here, a living artist, the piece sold for $90 million in Christie's. So collectibles certainly have been hot.
Well, the one thing with collectibles, Wolf, is they don't really get priced daily, right? The stock market swoon that we've seen is actually, you know, started in October, got a bit of a recovery in November, and then a real big downdraft in December. So maybe we'll see what happens with those collectibles when they get repriced and resold at market.
Well, it's interesting because here in the article I'm quoting, it said they will always have some sort of a market because somebody loves them. With a share, there's no sense owning it other than the sake of owning, which I completely disagree. When you own a share of a business, Jack, what do you own?
You own the cash flow.
Yeah.
The future discounted cash flow of that business.
And therefore, you own the profit of the business and the retained earnings and the goodwill and the assets and the brand. And yes, that goes for Apple, too. A stock got absolutely annihilated this week. Oh, my goodness me, down 8%. So, well, 2019 has been a fest of sorts, shall I say. You put the word in front of that one. But we also have to deal with Brexit and China and all that good stuff. So we have to speak to our global international strategist, Mr. Robert Jukes, who is on the line in London right here, right now. Good morning and Happy New Year to you, Robert.
Good morning and Happy New Year. So, David Hockney to Robert Jukes. I don't think that's ever happened before.
Well, there you go. It is 2019, after all, a time for new beginnings, I guess we shall say, Jukes. Let's talk first and foremost about Brexit. Where are we at? What's the risk to the market? Exit, stay? Please, simplify it. What's going on?
It's a mess. I think that's the plain and simple take on Brexit. So right now, Theresa May, our Prime Minister, is traveling across to Europe on a diplomacy mission, trying to seek some reassurances, some legal reassurances from European leaders about part of the deal which is unpalatable that she's presenting to UK Parliament. As it stands, the soundings that she's taken, that the press have taken, is that the deal that she's arrived at with the Europeans for exit won't wash at the at UK Parliament. It'll probably go through European Parliament. They think they've got a good deal, but MPs do not think in the UK that we've got a good deal. So they're likely to vote it down, hence why she's back in Europe seeking some more legal clarifications and changes around the edges to make it a little more palatable to lawmakers here in the UK.
Are we going to get closure to this story in 2019 to make a long story short?
That's the one thing that markets hate, right? They hate uncertainty. They just don't know what's going to happen. And it's hard to say, I don't know, but really you don't know what's going to happen, especially in British politics right now. But that creates part of this fear sentiment and the negative sentiment loop that we have in equity markets at the moment.
So again, Jukes, yeah. Is it going to get put to bed this year?
I think it probably will. I can't be certain about that even, whether it will be put to bed or not. But I think it probably will. March is the crunch point. That's the date that we leave, the end of March.
Isn't that wild? I'm just thinking about that. Sorry to interject there, but Donald Trump had a 90-day ceasefire with China. And I think that 90-day comes up at the end of March, too. So beware, I guess, of the Ides of March.
Yeah, for sure. But I guess even before we get there, there's the vote in a couple of weeks in Parliament, which will cause probably some more discomfort for May. It may even end her leadership as Prime Minister. Who knows how that's going to go. But it really doesn't look like the deal will go through in Parliament in a couple of weeks' time. So what that leaves us is with a couple of possibilities, one of which is that we crash out of Europe with no deal at all, and that would be reverting to WTO rules, which will be very, very painful for everyone involved. And the other option, another likely option, these are the two tails, I think, which are becoming fatter, the most unlikely parts of the distribution of outcomes becoming more likely by the day. The other end of that, the other tail that's becoming fatter, is the possibility that we don't exit at all, and that Parliament finds some way to force another vote, another people's vote, that is.
I read about that.
To leave or not.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking with Robert Jukes, we're speaking with Robert Jukes, by the way. He's in London. We're trying to make some sense of Brexit, exit, and just the global state of the markets and the economy. Look, we're going to go to break and get right back with Robert Jukes live from London, courtesy of Canaccord Genuity, right after this.
Don't go anywhere. There's more great show after this. You're listening to Hi-Fi Radio from Global News Radio 640 Toronto.
Oh, I love it. Absolutely. Hey, Jukes, can you do us a favor? Can you get Mick on the line? Let's see what Mick has to say about Brexit. Hey?
Yeah. Well, you're taking us back there to the year of my birth, of course, with that song. It's literally is as old as I am.
It's such a classic, man. I just love it. I absolutely love it. You know, music makes us feel better. I think it brings sanity to this craziness that we're all in the midst of. You know, over the long term, I'm quoting now Warren Buffett, over the long term, the stock market news will be good. In the 20th century, the United States endured two world wars and other traumatic and expensive military conflicts, the Depression, a dozen or so recessions and financial panics, oil shocks, a flu epidemic, the resignation of a disgraced president. We're not talking about Trump yet. Yet the Dow rose from 66 to 11,500. And I think that probably goes back to, 2000. That was from Warren Buffett. The other one's from Byron Wien. Disasters have a way of not happening. So according to Byron, there will be no disaster coming out of Brexit either way. So we all can take a deep breath in that. But certainly the uncertainty.
Pain's a big motivator too, Wolf. And I think that, like you said, that the British people, the UK people may vote, may look at what they voted on in the past and say maybe that wasn't the outcome that they're actually looking for.
Yeah, but the people of England have voted. I don't understand, Robert. How can you vote again when you already voted?
Well, I think the issue that many lawmakers are making is that a number of rules were broken by the Brexit campaigners at the original Brexit vote in 2016. Plus, the British people weren't sure exactly about what they were voting for. So there are a number of claims made by both sides which have turned out not to be true. So it's another vote, a number of years on, where more of the facts are now known. I think for me, one of the very depressing things about the last vote was that the most Googled term the day after the Brexit vote in the UK was "What is the EU?" In much the same way that the most Googled term after Trump was elected was "How do I become Canadian?" It's depressing.
I'm going to interject here, Robert, because Jack gave me a good one a couple months ago, and apparently, when you Google the word "idiot," Donald Trump comes up first.
That was about a month ago. They may have changed that by now, but yeah, it was true.
And pure algorithm, pure mathematics, my good friend. When you vote the word, Google the word "idiot," Donald Trump comes up first.
It's not just one hit. There's multiple hits on him.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely incredible. Hey, let's
I'm
pivot.
I'm doing it right now.
Let's pivot here, if we may.
I
look at the strength in the U.S. dollar and hence the weakness in multiple currencies. I haven't looked at the pound, but I'm assuming the pound is weak too. All currencies.
It is, 126.
Yeah, so
it's come off.
Do you think you get yourself a reflexive, I'm going to use that word, a reflexive response this year at some point with currencies whereby the U.S. dollar sells off and hence the pound, the Canadian dollar, the Australian dollar, the yuan, the yen, they all rally?
No. I think, let me deal with the UK first. I think you've got a binary set of outcomes there. It goes 10% weaker if we crash out on a hard Brexit. It gets maybe 25% stronger if we get a deal, or even stronger than that if we decide not to leave.
Sorry, I want to interrupt. Your pound would go up 25% from here?
Oh yeah, I reckon if we don't leave, the pound recovers because the growth potential, the immediate growth potential for the UK is so much higher.
Excuse me, Robert. Robert, that's a big number for a currency, 25%. That's a huge number. Again, stocks can go up 25%. Even last year, Art and Wine, Robert, only went up 10%. And the Canadian dollar last year was down 8%, and that was a very dramatic move. By the way, we do have Robert Jukes on the line. He's our chief strategist, strategist.
I was going to say that.
International strategist with Canaccord Genuity. He's across the pond, gracious enough to join us this morning live from London.
The pound going up 25% that Robert talks about, that's a huge motivator for the UK people to go back to the polls and actually vote. Because think of the wealth creation that you create internally inside the UK.
Instantaneous.
Purchasing power, real estate, all their assets appreciate by 25%. It doesn't mean it's going to happen exactly that way. But I'm going to assume that Robert's, relatively close with his appreciation.
Robert, I want to ask
pound.
You if I interject. Again, I've rarely bought British stock. Perhaps I own them in some ETFs. But what are some of your finest blue chip companies in England that would have an international brand that we could take a peek at just for fun?
Well, in Europe, we've got something like 30% of the top international brands. And a lot of those are...
I'm speaking specifically on the London Stock Exchange.
Sure. So a lot of them are listed in the UK. So you think of Rolls-Royce, for example. You perhaps know that as a car maker, but it's...
They make great engines, jet engines, fantastic jet engines.
Exactly.
The new Boeing has that Rolls-Royce engine in it, I believe. $200 million plane.
Yeah. We've got healthcare companies that you'll know, GlaxoSmithKline, for example.
I own Glaxo.
We're loaded with companies which not just British companies. You think about petroleum, BP, it's a Royal Dutch Shell, but also companies that chose to list here, which aren't necessarily British. They've just chosen the British market to list on. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking many of the mining companies, for example, Rio Tinto, and there are plenty of stocks, plenty of great stocks here, which AstraZeneca, which you could do very well with on a right call on a Brexit play. I mean, they're all exporters, so it makes in the top FTSE 100, I think something like 70% of earnings comes from outside the UK.
Except that if the pound rallies, their exports are going to drop off then. So the weak pound's actually been a benefit to them, no?
It has been, but the uncertainty has not been. So whilst you're right that sterling will be a bit of a hindrance, it's not as much of a hindrance to these companies exporting as it is filling out all the paperwork that would be required to get to markets that they've been able to access hitherto relatively freely. Think of all the investment that's been foregone because companies aren't quite sure whether they're going to stay domiciled in the UK or whether they're going to leave for new European headquarters. The UK economy is only just beginning to feel the effects of a potential Brexit.
Interesting. Yeah, there is also some concerns that a lot of the financials, the banking hub of London, would perhaps move to Germany. But Robert, my good friend, I do want to thank you for your time. We are out of time here on Hi-Fi Radio. Robert Jukes, our international strategist, stationed in London so we can get a view from across the pond as the world has become very, very flat and we have to have broader lenses as we manage money. So all the best to you, my good friend. Thank you.
Thank you. Always a pleasure.
Thank you. Coming up next, we are going to have a discussion on, Jack,
financial planning with Michael Bellamy.
Financial planning 101 for 2019. We got some things you need to do. Stay tuned to Hi-Fi Radio. More about money right after this.
Money. Let's take a break. But after, Wolf and Jack will continue their in-depth discussion about money. You're listening to Hi-Fi Radio from Global News Radio 640 Toronto.
Welcome back to the show, Hi-Fi Radio. You know, it's not all about retirement. No, you got to live day to day and don't get too caught up in the noise. It's ironic because I speak out of both sides of my mouth when it comes to the world of money. Having a long view, extending your time horizon can do wonders. Doing the fiscal fast, I shall say, and always thinking about tomorrow, not enjoying yourself today, I think is also something that we have to deal with. Got a great article I can't even pronounce his name, I'm not going to bother, but 7 Steps to Wealth. Number 1, start early. Number 2, invest regularly. Number 3, cliche as it may be, think long term. Which leads us to number 4, have patience, my friends. Number 5, ignore volatility. Number 6, ignore noise. And number 7, stay the course. Oh, there is just so much talk around each and every point. Jack, I'm going to start with start early. Last week I spoke about my new, which I got so excited about, my favorite Christmas present almost, was my Andex chart. It's this great big chart with valuations going back to 1950 of oil, interest rates, Canadian dollar, the Toronto stock market, T-bills, bonds. You go down the list. And if you had been born in 1950 and if someone had given you $100 and you invested it in the U.S. small cap index, the index is a broad basket of small U.S. publicly traded companies, that $100 would have grown into $740,000. To do that, you would have had to start early. You would not have had to invest regularly, but you would have had to think long term, have patience, ignore volatility, ignore noise, and stay the course. And had you done that, $100 became $740,000. Yeah, in 68 years. But we have Mike Bellamy on the line. He's our financial planner with Canaccord Genuity Wealth Management. And Mike is all about creating plans for clients and to follow those 7 steps. But I don't think Mike has ever really thought about that plan of $100 to the little baby that was born in 2019. Baby Sebastian, by the way, apparently was the baby born in Toronto. My son's name is Sebastian.
There you go.
Yeah, so what do you think about that, Mike? $100 becomes $740. We don't really need you anymore. And I guess don't need Jack and I either, just buy the U.S. small cap index. And
well, you would have owned Apple in the late 70s. You probably would have owned some Microsoft because those small cap companies,
correct,
over the long term, a lot of them, some of them fail. But a lot of them turn into, not a lot of them, but the darlings turn into the large caps.
And I would be, and I bet you most of those companies did not fail. I bet
no, they get consolidated,
taken out, privatized, etc. Sure, some went bankrupt, but you know the notion of bankruptcy isn't something that happens that frequently. Truth be told, we talk about quality companies. I can't name a whole lot that have gone bankrupt. Sure, there was Nortel, Air Canada went bankrupt a couple times, but for the most part, they don't tend to go bankrupt. Blockbusters, but they're few and far between. So Mike Bellamy, our little financial planner, you've done a great job helping our clients each and every year. We continue to encourage our clients to sit down with you to make sure that they go through those 7 steps. So what do you got to share with us for 2019? What do we need to do, Michael?
Yeah, so just continuing on that kind of those 7 steps that you just handed out there, the couple of things we've been finding for clients, the one thing is with the noise. With so much data available to us these days, it's hard to ignore it. But sometimes you kind of just got to, turn off the TV and just stay the course, which we try to tell clients. There's a lot of things that can change from month to month, but we're trying to look long term view. And on that,
Mike. I want to jump in right here, now, because what Jack and I are seeing some of our clients do is they're sort of fooling around on us a little bit, and they're going to their bank teller. And they're buying these things called GICs.
Yep.
They sat down with you and they created a financial plan that was conservatively written with a 5% target of growth. They will sit down with Jack and I, and we say, we're going to try to generate a 6% to 8% return for you through a balanced portfolio tilted towards stock. And again, I go back to that $100 that grew into $740,000, that grew at a 14% clip. So, you know, if you buy good quality blue chip equities, bigger than small companies, I don't think a 7% return is out of the realm of possibility. I think it's highly probable.
Yeah, that's over a market cycle. So if you sell at the trough and buy at the peak, that's a recipe. You're not going to get that 14. You're not going to get the 5. You probably won't even get the GIC return.
But so people are not they are participating in the volatility in the wrong way. The volatility is scaring people, Michael. And they are not looking for a 5% return. They're looking for a return of their money. Knowing again, over time, the market is going to return your money and then some. But day-to-day prices get marked up on the board. Again, you spoke about the instantaneous access to information. It can really cause people to spin their heads in the wrong direction.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, and you know, I was actually just running some numbers before the call, too, even just going back to the tax-free savings account. You know, that little account that's all of a sudden starting to grow in value. And people
those accounts are getting up to almost 100 grand now. You're right.
Yeah. So, like, I kind of did some back running of numbers. And if you opened it, you know, since inception in 2009, if you've put in the max each year, got a 5% return, that account should be around $75,000.
Correct.
Right now.
Yep.
If we look out 30 years, so, you know, you're looking at a 30-year window. So for the millennial clients that we're talking to that were encouraging the tax-free savings account, at a 5% return, you're looking at about $410,000 per spouse.
Wow. Not bad, eh?
Yeah, and that will generate $25,000 per year of income tax-free for 31 years, assuming you continue to get that 5% through retirement.
Right, and again, so, I think that is a reasonable outcome.
Yeah, exactly.
But and the GIC route, you won't do that in a GIC route. You're going to get half of that return,
exactly.
Half of the return, which is fine if that's all you can tolerate, which does bring, I think, Jack and I to our next point. And our next point is, with this market volatility, if it's too much for you, Jack, what should they do?
You got to talk to your advisor and come up with a reasonable plan to meet your long-term goals and your risk tolerance. Because if you don't, then you sell at the wrong time. And it can be in times of panic, which can be a lot worse than even the situation that we're in right now.
Because, you know, I want to get into this further with you, Michael, after the break. Again, Michael Bellamy on the line, our financial planner at Canaccord, available to create a financial plan for each and every one of you. Just give Jack and I a call, and we can help set that up. But again, I want to go back to when people say, gee whiz, my account's down 5, 6, 7%, OMG. You know, something with that statement alone says, gee whiz, perhaps the equity market is not the place for you. Perhaps it is a GIC route. But with that route, well, your outcome will be significantly less, but perhaps you're going to sleep a little better. And that is the real trade-off that people have to accept. And unfortunately, when things are good, they don't think about it. They only think about this stuff when things get tough and cheap and on sale. And, you know, we got Brittany the Butcher in studio. I don't know if Brittany is into shoes, but I know my wife certainly likes shoes. I said, Kathleen, if Louboutin shoes were 50% off today, what would you do? And she said she would run to the store and buy a pair of Louboutin shoes. A Louboutin is a high-end shoe, very, very expensive shoe. It's a blue-chip shoe, I shall say, because there will always be that market that will buy that product. The same thing goes for equities, but when equities are on sale, people don't want to buy them. They run to the bank teller to buy a GIC, and that, I think, is a faux pas. Hi-Fi Radio, we'll be back right after this.
Listen, we're going to take a break, but when we come back, more money talk. You're listening to Hi-Fi Radio from Global News Radio 640 Toronto.
Well, it's that time of year when you start to think about money. You pay your bills, the credit card bills come in, you look at your statements from your investments for 2018. And you say, what am I going to do in 2019 with my RESP and my TFSA and, more importantly, my RRSP? Yes, your retirement savings plan. And, well, we got Mike Bellamy on the line. He is our financial planner. You fail to plan, you plan to fail. So make sure you do have a financial plan and go back to that financial plan. You know what's amazing, Mike? I would hazard to bet any client that you wrote a financial plan for, say, 5 years ago, if you looked at that plan today, I would almost guarantee you that client would be on course despite what happened in the last 3 months in the marketplace. Would you agree?
And, that, Yeah, and that's the big thing, like just kind of touching on what you were talking about before the break there. With, you know, we're starting to get through that cycle again where we're starting to see clients coming back in. You know, they're hitting that 2 to 3 year window where we like to redo the financial plan for them. And the big reason we run these plans so conservatively, again, you know, 5% return, 2.5% inflation, is for that exact reason. And nobody ever looks back at their plan when their accounts are up 14%.
Yep.
But when, you know, their account's down 5 or 6, they all of a sudden, you know, like you said, they run to GICs or whatever it might be. So, you know, when we do the updates, we could do the update right now, and I would venture to say that majority of them are either on par, assuming they've done the savings we've set out for them, or above, right? So it's one of those things that you, rather than running to the teller and getting the GICs, is maybe running to the financial planner and rerunning some numbers and saying, okay, where are we? Exactly. You know, it's been maybe 2 or 3 years since we sat down and looked at the numbers. What are our accounts at? Where were they supposed to be? And, you know, that's why we build those charts out, so that we have them for these times and for down the road. It's, we tell clients these are static. They're not static documents. We want to continue to update them and look back on them as, you know, they're there for a purpose, not for just, you know, you look at it and say,
right,
okay, we're on the right and go from there.
Yeah, it really gives you that long-term perspective that you're looking for as an investor. We talk about long-term all the time, and it is a cliche, but when you do a financial plan, you're running projections going out, you know, 20, 30 years. So you are actually taking that long-term view. And it goes back to another point that Wolfgang made earlier in the session with the media. The media, it tries to sensationalize everything. So they go out there, they go out and print whatever the most scary story is and really spook people. So, I mean, if people are paying attention to that and they're focusing on that short-term noise, it can be scary, but when you step back, take the long-term view, look at your financial plan, you know, and if you're ahead of plan, obviously that's great, continue saving. If you're not, you have to adjust accordingly. Maybe you have to save a little bit more or spend a bit less in retirement.
You know, again, Mike, we have to, it is part and parcel our duty to remind clients. But, and Jack and I try real hard to do that, and usually clients call us in good days, not bad, to give us more money. But we remind them about the downside risk of the market. Again, back to basic, stock market, the whole market. Forget the companies that you buy, and that's really what matters, is the individual businesses you buy. So sales can be going up, profit can be going up, but the market, for whatever reason, call it Brexit, call it China, call it Trump, call it the central bank, whatever, the market is going to always adjust correctly, incorrectly, regardless, and as such can correct significantly to the downside, usually for temporary moments in time, but it can fall 50%. So if half of your account is in stock and half of your accounts are in bonds, and let's say bonds do virtually nothing, let's say they make you 2%, and in fact, last year they fell 2%, but let's say bonds do virtually nothing, or 2-3%, regardless, half your accounts in stocks, you have to be willing to tolerate 25% downside, period. So to be down right now 5, 6, 7, 8% and to feel stress over that to the point where, gee whiz, it's not the right program for you, better now to exit than when it's down 25%, because that too is going to come at some point if you are a long-term investor. Again, that long-term investor, Mike, who put $100 into the S&P Small Cap Index in 1950 and did nothing. They forgot about it. And opened up their account statement in 2018, which is 68 years later. It's a good retirement age. $740,000 U.S. in their account. And that means they dripped the dividend and they got the growth and they dealt with big bear markets in there. Hey, Jack, 1972, 73, wasn't that a 50% bear market?
I wasn't around at that time, but yeah, it was pretty tough times for the market. You also had the 87 crash. You had the tech boom bust. So there was lots of financial crisis.
Can I ask you about 1929? I know you weren't around for 1929 either. You're a student of the market there, Jack. Come on. Jeez, come on. Mike, help me out here with this Jack guy.
Yeah.
It's a new year. You know, he had last week off. Oh, my God.
Well, the important point, too, is
you
look at how tough the market was last year, so October to the end of the year. That was in a time where you've never had better GDP growth since the financial crisis. You had over 3% GDP growth in the U.S., and earnings were up 25%. So the market can do things that you really don't expect in a good, a fundamental-driven economy.
Yeah. Mike, you know, again, I'm going to go back to we have to hold our clients' hands every now and then. I like your notion about updating those plans every 2 to 3 years. They're not static documents. They're alive, living, breathing organism. They're a reflection of your present and future financial prosperity. And then the objective is not to outlive your money. But more importantly, when things are on sale, Louboutin shoes, Ferraris, Rolex watches, or a two-for-one deal at the movies, you go buy them. Do the same in the market. Don't run. Don't go scared right now. This is not the time to go scared. It's time to perhaps review to see if this is the right program for you. If it's not, you have to speak to your advisor. But I go back to quality businesses are on sale. If you have a time horizon of 5 years or so, I think it's a layup, Mike.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, 100%. That's what we're trying to preach to clients to make sure that they, you know, are sticking to the game plan, right? At the end of the day, there's going to be ups and downs just like anything. And we just need to make sure we're staying the course for that, you know, 20, 15, 30-year time horizon that we're looking at.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you, Mike Bellamy. You're a good planner. You're a good friend. You're a good guy. And I want to wish you success in 2019. And as I said, if you fail to plan, you plan to fail. So let's have a good plan for each and every one of you. And that's what we're here for. You on Hi-Fi Radio. Coming up next, we have Jennifer Radman. She's a portfolio manager with Caldwell Investments. Right after this.
Making money is the best. So how do you make more money?
Life would be sunny. Plenty of money.
Come on back after this. You're listening to Hi-Fi Radio from Global News Radio 640 Toronto.
If I...
Well, I guess you can if you listen to Hi-Fi Radio and you do the things Jack and I tell you to do, including thinking long-term and ignoring the noise and volatility, and having smart people to manage your money. Now, this young lady on the line, Jennifer Radman, she's a CFA lead portfolio manager with Caldwell Investments, and she manages a value momentum fund. And, well, it looks like a pretty interesting product, so I figured we'd get Jennifer on the line, talk to her a little bit about what she sees for 2019 coming out of a tougher year in 2018. So thank you very much, Jennifer, for joining us on Hi-Fi Radio.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So, Jennifer, just looking at your funds that you've been running here for just out of the gate, about 3 years of data. These funds are 3 years young, shall I say?
Actually, seven. I think it's F class. That's only 3 years.
Oh, so okay. Yeah. And so over the seven-year period, now that you got your year-end numbers up, I guess, how has that fund done over the seven-year period, net of fees?
Well, our clients are very happy. So since inception, we're up 9.3%. That's net of all fees, and that's versus 4.8% versus the TSX Total Return Index. So if you take the mutual fund industry, they use the $10,000, what that would have done.
Yep.
In this fund, you would have more than doubled what you would have made in the market simply putting the money in the market.
No. I opened the show up speaking about, and again, you run a small cap fund, which are smaller companies. They're not the TSX 60, Royal Bank, Tim Hortons of the world. You're buying smaller companies. I see you're like Cargojet and Aecon, Parkland Fuel, Element Fleet Financial. So the names that sort of fly under the radar. But Jennifer, I'm going to throw you a pop quiz here, being a small cap manager. Okay, it's January. We're going back to school, you and I, right here, right now. If you invested $100, Jennifer, in the U.S. small cap index in 1950, do you know what that would have grown into by December 31st of 2017?
Oh, I imagine the number would have been pretty impressive.
How impressive, Jennifer, just for fun? 68 years, $100.
you're stumping me on that one, Wolfgang.
$740,000, Jennifer.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a 14% CAGR, 14% compounded annual rate of return. Hey, by the way, I want to be short-sighted because the clients are doing it to us all the time. Coming out of 2018, how did your funds perform at the end of the year?
Oh, the end of the year. So we had, I guess, the last 3 months. So in the TSX, we had a pretty big down month in October. We outperformed in October. The November was up, underperformed a little bit there, and then December outperformed that. So with this fund, what we tend to see is better performance on the downside. And so one of the stats for that is that down capture ratio in over a five-year period, as an example, we're at about 32%. So kind of the percentage of any down move in the market that's actually captured by the strategy.
Yeah, and I see that. But again, can I politely ask you, how much was the fund down in 2018? I want to make a point on here.
Yeah, no, for sure. So it was down 6%. TSX Total Return down 8.9%.
Yeah, no, so again, down 6%. And let me ask this question here. Are clients selling your fund? Are you getting redemptions?
We haven't seen too many redemptions. What we've actually seen is pretty good growth over the last 12 months.
Good.
Yep, and that's been pretty rare in the Canadian equity space. Most of the Canadian equity funds are seeing redemptions. A lot of people just don't like kind of the opportunity set in Canada, especially when you're talking about financials being such a big part of the index, and then also energy and with what's happened with energy. And I think that's really why this strategy is resonating, because as you pointed out, it is very different from simply owning kind of the large cap. So it's a very, it's been very complimentary to people, advisors like yourself, placing it in their books, and then also individual investors.
Yeah. We're on the line here with Jennifer Radman. I'm going to say, Jennifer, you are gutsy. And again, we're going to commercial break, but I want to highlight a point here. You're a very gutsy gal in that your portfolio as of the end of November was sitting in 40% cash. Do you still have that weighting in cash right here, right now?
We're actually up to 55% today.
You're 55%. So you're halfway out of the market, Jennifer Radman. Oh, boy. We have to keep you on the line to find out what has you so frightened, my friend. Hi-Fi Radio. We'll be back with Jennifer Radman, portfolio manager with Coldwell Investments, right after this.
Stay with us. There's more shows still to come. You're listening to Hi-Fi Radio from Global News Radio 640 Toronto.
I wonder if people feel that way about their portfolios these days, all pumped up and excited.
money talks. Money's yelling at them right now.
This is Hi-Fi Radio. I'm Wolfgang Klein. Jack Hartle, co-host in studio here with me. We're speaking with Jennifer Radman. She's a portfolio manager with Coldwell Investments. Jennifer is, I'm going to say, quite bearish. You know, just looking at her weightings and what she's holding, she has over 50% cash in her portfolio. So what's your thinking there, Jennifer? And what's with all the cash?
Well, I mean, it's a function of the strategy. So we are running a quantitative strategy, a factor strategy. And really, when we started this 7 years ago, it kind of came out of a lot of the academic research that you saw in factor investing. And so one of the main factors in the portfolio is momentum. And so by definition, stocks have to be doing well. And so our big cash weighting is just a function of a lot of stocks having rolled over and not much in the market really hitting our screen. So we have that 55% cash balance today. We've been around 30% cash since the beginning of November in 2017. So it's been, over a 12-month period, we've had a significant amount of cash and just 9 stocks in the portfolio today. So we've seen with that momentum, the stuff that's been holding up relatively well has been more on the defensive side of things. And so even our portfolio today, we've seen a pretty big rotation out of the industrials, which were a big weight for us, kind of the middle part of the year, and now into more defensive names.
So Jennifer, what would give you the all clear? What would be the signal that you'd be looking for to get yourself, I guess, more positioned for a recovery? You know, that once the market has bottomed out, the bottoming process has, you know, gone through its course, and then start going higher. So what would get you excited about the market again?
Yeah, I mean, it's part of our quantitative screening process. So we need stocks to be trading higher. And so as the market sort of bottoms out and starts that path higher again, those are really going to be the signals for us. So that's one of the things. But even with kind of some of the stock prices going higher, we're able to sort of tie that back to a fundamental story on what's happening to the stock. And Wolfgang, you mentioned it earlier. A lot of the names that we're participating in are kind of under the radar, the smaller caps. And so we tend to find that whenever there is a certain catalyst, say an acquisition, a change in the management team, CEO level, or even a board, kind of a strategic decision to do the business a little bit differently. Sometimes it takes time for the market to fully appreciate that, especially when there are these smaller companies. And so that's really how we've been able to find that that edge in the market.
We're speaking with Jennifer Radman. She's a portfolio manager with Coldwell Investments. She runs a value momentum fund. Almost seems like an oxymoron, but she's obviously buying inexpensive companies that are actually moving higher in price. And she's telling us if they aren't moving higher in price, she sells them and waits till she finds something that works. Right now, Jennifer's sitting on a lot of cash. I've never met a portfolio manager sitting on 50% cash. I'm going to commend you for that, Jennifer, because you're actually earning your keep. You're doing something different. You're not a closet indexer. And you are, you know, you're going out on a limb, because if you're wrong, well, you're going to lag in terms of performance. But I look at your performance and it's been very, very good. You're not getting all of the upside of the market by the looks of things. You're getting 70% of the upside, which people may scoff at, but the downside protection is significant. You're only participating in 30% of the downside. So I think you said to us year to date of 2018, your portfolio is down about 6%. You know, no one's going to be happy with that, but considering the global markets, wow, it's actually a very, very good number. Let me ask you, why do you not go outside of Canada and put some U.S. into your portfolio?
I mean, great question. A lot of the Canadian equity peers that were comped against, a lot of them go into the U.S. market just because there's such a limited opportunity set in Canada, especially with mutual funds in Canada being so big in size. So that's another one of our advantages. When we built the model in the quantitative aspect of it, it was kind of a really focused product. So we've been looking into potentially putting something together for the U.S. market, but it's still very early stages. So it's been, you know, I think a lot of people appreciate the plain vanilla type of a strategy. So we only own Canadian stocks or cash. And, you know, going into the U.S. market, it poses some problems for people, especially when you have kind of currency moves. A lot of the times that a performance of the U.S. market gets masked. So we've seen people appreciate that, this type of a strategy.
Two last questions for you, Jennifer, and we have to fly here. But number one, what is the turnover of the portfolio? And number two, how big is the portfolio?
Yeah, so the turnover is about 100% a year, and so that would be on the higher end of
wow.
things. And you can think of that. We're really just trying to kind of exploit that opportunity for where there's been a change in the business and the market's still behind the curve on what the value of that new story is.
Yeah.
So and then once that kind of momentum rolls over, that's when we would sell out of the position and move into something else. So,
but it's actively, really, it's an actively managed product, obviously. And sorry, then my final question for you, we're out of time here, but how big is the fund?
$55 million.
It's a small fund, eh? Well, I'll tell you something, Jennifer. It's very, very interesting. We'll have to probably get together, bring you into the office, and have a little powwow at our little roundtable to delve deeper into the Canadian Value Momentum Fund. I congratulate you. Very, very impressive numbers there, Jennifer. You should be very proud of your hard work. And, well, you created a model, and you're sticking to the model, and so far, the model has shown you very, very good results. I want to wish you success in 2019. That's it for time, folks. Hi-Fi Radio. We'll be back on Global News Radio 640 in Toronto each and every Saturday from 7 a.m. to 8 a.m. And, well, if you can't get up for the show, you can certainly podcast it. It's always available podcast after it airs on the Terrestrial Radio Network. Global News Radio 640 in Toronto. Have yourself a great weekend.
You've been listening to Hi-Fi Radio with Wolfgang Klein and Jack Hartle, portfolio managers at Canaccord Genuity Wealth Management. For questions about today's show or any money questions you need answered, email Wolf and Jack at wolfgangklein.com. Hi-Fi Radio, for the love of money. We'll see you next week.
Canada may be known for its landscapes and friendly people, but beneath the surface lies a darker side of crime, history, and the paranormal. Since 2017, the award-winning Dark Poutine podcast has explored the shadowy corners of the Great White North and beyond, delivering chilling tales from a uniquely Canadian perspective. Hosted by Mike Brown and Matthew Stockton, with over 300 episodes and fresh releases every Monday, Dark Poutine is your weekly ticket to the creepier side of Canada. Listen to Dark Poutine on Apple, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts.